This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, online at WTKA.com. It is that time every Thursday, 9 o'clock hour. Fellas from MGO Blog, come on for the MGO Blog Roundtable. They are with us again today, starting off with the HD version. This is like, what is it, HDR? What's like this? This is the 4K version 4K, yeah. Of Brian Cook. How you doing, Brian?
Good. I got a new computer, so that's why this looks better.
Of course, Craig Ross is back with us as well. Craig, good morning.
Morning. Trying to be as incoherent as usual.
And Seth Fisher is with us as well. Seth, good morning.
Brian, I don't even have to come and do the podcast live anymore. You look so good that we could just do all of our stuff online.
Yeah, it does look good.
Thanks, guys.
So listen, I know, guys, the last few weeks in a row, I started off the show, it's like, man, I hate that it's another NIL topic, guys. I'm going to do my best that we move to move away from NIL and do something different. So don't blame me for this. Don't blame me for this. I really tried. Blame Nick Saban. This is Nick Saban's fault. But Nick Saban just did exactly what I said was on the horizon. I didn't think it would be Nick Saban would be the one doing it. But you guys might recall talking about with Phil Martelli. He was saying, hey, the camaraderie and the brotherhood is going away. And I said, hey, this is actually kind of a good thing because coaches are going to start calling one another out. So Nick Saban in some sort of forum, I don't know what he was a part of, some sort of panel he was on, they got him going. And he was just looking for an opportunity to call out a number of things that he finds wrong. And he said, quote, I mean, we were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, and likeness. We didn't buy one player, but I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future because more and more people are doing it. It's tough, guys. Now, this is self-serving to call A&M out, right? But this is what I'm talking about. This is coaches or a coach calling out another coach. And I think we're going to see more and more of this. And I don't think that's a bad thing.
I guess not. I mean, I've always been like the proponent of spiciness, like the Mike Hart thing and the D'Antonio thing. Everybody's like, this is bad for the game. I'm like, no, this is Razor Ramon. Come on, let's go. So, like, I like it when it's spicy. But what is Nick Saban like? Does he seriously think that nobody on Alabama's team? a red scent. Like, it's legal now, Nick. You can just tell people what you're doing now and just be like, yeah, we got a real good NIL program. But no, he's like, no, we didn't. Maybe he believes it. Maybe he believes that Nick Saban is just the most charming guy in the universe. Maybe he's like, Miss Terry. I mean...
That's a great point. It's a great point. I mean, the entitlement. It's just his first line. I mean, we were second in recruiting. Like they're supposed to be first. Like, it's a problem when we are first in recruiting. Someone must be cheating. Clearly, like I said, it's self-serving, Craig. I get it. Yeah. He's not the best messenger for any other topic for that matter. I mean, but he didn't stop calling out. That was a self-serving call. It wasn't self-serving to call out Deion Sanders. And so he left that one and he started talking about Jackson State. He said, hell, read about it in the paper. I mean, Jackson State paid a guy $1 million last year. And that was a really good Division I player to come to the school. It was in the paper and they bragged about it. Nobody did anything about it. I mean, these guys in Miami that are going to play basketball there for $400,000, it's in the newspaper. The guy tells you how he's doing it. So he went and made call-outs that had no benefit to Alabama.
Well, he's telling the truth. And I mean, that's the sort of interesting thing. I mean, he's in a sort of strange way for Saban to be calling people out. I mean, look, here's the reality. NIL doesn't exist. NIL is just a name that's being slapped onto paying players, because that's what's going on. I mean, you got The Athletic reported this week that, and they didn't say if it was a football or basketball player, I don't know. And they didn't say the school or the kid, but they said that one student clinched an $8 million deal in the class of 2023, or has clinched it, and that they're going to pay him $350K up front and monthly payments that will amount to $2 million a year for every year he stays at
the school. They didn't say that it was a quarterback going to Ohio State?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think they just said it was a player.
Okay. But they didn't specify which player or which school called Ohio State.
Right. And obviously, right, it might have been. But obviously, you know, the payer of these particular monies is not getting their money's worth in the marketplace in the ordinary sense. All that's going on is somebody at this school or some consortium of interest in the school is paying such a kid. And I saw that University of Florida for next year has pieced together $5 million. And University of Tennessee announced they're trying to raise $25 million for next year to be able to pay players. This isn't NIL. This is just paying guys. And that's okay. That's where we're at. And so Saban is, you know, tilting at windmills or maybe gin mills at this point is what's going on.
I mean, Saban, I mean, he's got some perspective because he's been around the game a long time. Like, he remembers, mm-hmm. he was coaching back when Plaxico Burress went to Michigan State just for the education, yeah. right? Like, so he knows. He knows how it's supposed to work. But, I mean, he reminds, you know what he's like? He's like the communists in Russia when communism yeah. fell, and all of a sudden, like, all the all these mobsters were starting to get a hold of things, and you're like, this is not fair that they can go and just, you know, grab control out of this thing. That's not right. I mean, he's a guy who benefited the most out of the old system. The old system was broken and corrupt and in place for a long time, and he benefited from it perfectly. He had his whole setup going. And whenever you shake things up like this, that's why he's mad at Deion Sanders, because if anyone can go and buy a player, then like a division, that's a player that Alabama would normally get, right? That's why they're so mad about
Florida
it.
State.
Yeah, he was committed to Florida State.
I was, and he flipped on signing day, and everybody was like, what is going on? This is the thing that Nick Saban does, though, right? Like 10 years ago, he was like, the spread offense. Is this what we want football to be? And then he went out and got a spread offense because that's what he needed to do. So he's going to complain about it, and then he's going to go back into the lab and be like, so how do we dominate this as well? So I'm not going to shed a tear for Alabama anytime soon. So I think they'll be fine. I mean, they did finish number two in recruiting without offering anyone a dime. So what do you think is going to happen once they start paying people?
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, I mean, and with Saban, wasn't he the big complainer about Harbaugh and his outreach camps?
Yeah.
It was Hugh Freeze.
Hugh Freeze just wanted to spend time with his family.
That was definitely Hugh Freeze. Hey, but listen. It is going to be the case. Like, if you call someone else out, they're going to call you out. If there's ever going to be any accountability in this profession, I think it's going to be coaches holding one another accountable. And if you call someone out A, you need to have receipts. That's number one. I didn't see any receipts from Nick Saban. B, you got to be prepared for them to find any skeletons in your closet. So what is Deion going to say about Nick Saban? I mean, I don't know how to, I don't know if they're going to be doing too many more Aflac commercials together. I thought they were boys. And I think Deion thought so too, because Deion came back and he said, you best believe I will address the lie that Coach Saban told tomorrow. I was awakened by my son, Shadura Sanders, who sent me the article that we paid Travis Hunter $1 million to play at Jackson State. We as a people don't have to pay our people to play with our people. He is going to have some fire for Nick Saban. I'm just wondering what it's going to be and when he's going to do it. I'm hitting refresh and I'm not seeing anything, Ira. Still nothing from Deion yet. And it's 9 o'clock. It's 9:21 Eastern time. When is Deion going to come with the fire?
Deion doesn't wake up before 11 a.m. Come on. He's Deion Sanders.
His thing last night was that his son like came and woke him up because it was because he saw the thing from Saban. He was like, "I just heard this. My boy just woke me up for this." So we've been waiting since like 8 o'clock or something for this.
I mean, why is it bad that that guy went to Jackson State? I think it's interesting.
It's not bad. It's good.
It's good for football. It's bad if you are someone who's benefiting from the old system. The old system made sure you had to go to an Alabama or Georgia to get paid the maximum amount.
We understand why Nick Saban is a little cheesed off, because he's got to adapt again, but he's going to do it and it's fine. Like, I mean, it's just what he does.
Yeah, I mean, these coaches, man, I like that there's going to be some. I was telling Ira, I ran into a Texas A&M assistant yesterday on the road. I was going through St. Louis and, you know, he said, who are you here to see? And I was telling him the players. He's like, yeah, man, give me some intel on that guy. And he said, you know, we need help. We need some help with info on these players. I said, man, you guys don't need any help. He said, yes, we do. Yes, we do. I said, no, you don't need any help down there at A&M. You guys are absolutely fine. That is for sure. And, you know, no sooner than I said that, Nick Saban comes out with this bomb that he drops on A&M. And hopefully there's more where that comes from, because I remember, and you guys remember, how coaches were all over John Beilein. He's this clean guy. He does it the right way. And it's like this big thing. And no one ever stopped to say, well, clean relative to what? If he's so clean, what does that say about the field that's supposed to be this bastion of doing things the right way, right? But he does it clean, and everyone, a lot of other guys are not, and no one's saying anything about it. No one's calling that out. Finally, they are. Maybe that'll be a part of getting somewhat cleaner down the line. It'll never be without cheating, but maybe we can have some semblance of fairness moving forward.
Yeah, the only one of us who remembers this would be Craig Ross, but in the 1950s, the Pac-12 was like the runaway conference. They were the ones who were paying everybody, and like everybody understood, and they had their whole system up. And then they got into this like circle of accusing each other, and that actually brought them all down. Like there was a
it did,
yeah. Like and it shook up the entire conference. And the Pac-12 is still kind of, you know, that's why they're more Big Ten-y today than they are SEC. Like that was the reason. Like they had this huge shakeup at that time. I'm rubbing my hands, hoping that happens. That like this gets into this an accusatory circle and someone starts investigating. But I mean, it's not going to happen. The way the NCAA works today is like Laramie Tunsil can just tell everybody, "Hey, I got paid at Ole Miss," and then it takes like 5 years for them to come up with a slap on the wrist or whatever.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, in the past, coaches were concerned about a circular firing squad.
So, man,
that doesn't exist anymore.
Seth, so you try to give me hope on Musa Diabate, but you can't give me any hope on this? Come on, man. Come on, give me something. I mean,
the hope is that things are going to get so ridiculous, and it's already kind of getting there. We're like, the schools feel like they have no control over their players right now, and that's what's upsetting them, and they want to go to the NCAA and get change. They have an option with a new president. They could possibly put somebody in there who changes the entire enforcement structure. But it's really about the enforcement structure, the way the NCAA works, and I've been hammering this forever. The school presidents are in charge, and you investigate your own school. The whole system is based on the idea that the school presidents hate football and want to do anything they can to destroy it. And they, until they change that premise, how they build their whole system, there isn't going to be anyone watching. So it doesn't make a difference what they do until they actually change that.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right. Let's switch gears and get into some actual sort of on-field stuff. So did you see the Pac-12 is doing away with divisions? Is it time? Is that do you want to see that? Do you want to just see the teams figure out a different way to determine the champion, rather than East versus West? They're going to go with the best winning percentages in the league. Is that the way to go? What do you think of that move by the Pac-12?
Well, I think that for the Pac-12, it makes a lot of sense. Also for conferences like the ACC, it makes a lot of sense. For the Big Ten, from my selfish perspective, like I feel like even though like Michigan versus Ohio State should be the championship game most years. And if there's a coronation game after that, that's fine. From a Michigan fan's perspective, I think the Big Ten should stick with their divisions. And maybe they should throw Penn State in the other division, just do away with the geography, basically. But I don't like the idea of like, all right, well, Michigan played Ohio State in the last game of the year, and they're still the two highest ranked teams, so they're still going to play in the conference championship game the next week. That just sort of invalidates the whole concept of the game and Michigan and Ohio State football in general. So for me personally, that's not something that I would like to see.
Well, the problem with the Big Ten, though, particularly in football, is it isn't really a conference from my point of view, because you got 14 teams and you play what, 9, mm-hmm. and so 4 teams aren't being played every year, and you know, I don't like it. I say get rid of a few teams, get rid of Michigan State, we don't need them in the conference, get rid of, I don't care, a couple others, and play everybody. I mean, 10 would be a good number. It's called the Big Ten, right? 10 would be a good number. And so I don't know what you do with when you got 14. I guess Brian may well be right. You've got almost no choice but to run 2 17 conferences. I don't know what the alternative is.
I have the alternative. Here's the answer.
Okay, good.
It's called a showcase, okay? Mm-hmm. And all you do is you can keep the divisions. The division crown is just a trophy, okay? It doesn't get you into the game. All it is like a cool thing to win. Because the divisions, even though, you know, we can work on them and improve them a little bit, but the idea is to play these rivalries every year, right? We want to play Ohio State every year. We should play Michigan State every year. We should not have rematches. Rematches in general are terrible, and the whole idea of Michigan playing Ohio State, I agree with Brian. You are supposed to play that game, and then you are supposed to just rub the score in the other team's face for a year. That is how that works. You do not change that, okay? What they can do is just keep the division system, right, and then have a showcase game at the end of the season where you start with the two best teams that did not play each other. And that's important. The ones who did not play each other from each division, the two best play each other. That's going to get you, that's going to answer almost any questions you have about who the real champion is. And then you go down the whole roster and play the best games that were not played. Okay? One of those divisions was going to have a game. This is how they set the schedule up now. One of those divisions was going to have 5 home games. One of them was going to have 4 home games already. So you already know who's going to have the home game for that last game. It's just the team that you just don't know who the team you're playing is. That solves the other problem, which is their scheduling. They don't want to have to schedule within a week. Well, this way you know at the end of the season, Iowa's going to be hosting the showcase game, right? And you just don't know who their opponent is until you see how it works out. I've run through this already for 10 seasons, and I'm writing an article on this. I've already gone through 10 historical Big Ten seasons. Every single time, it gives you really good games, and it answers who the Big Ten champion is. Because the Big Ten champion in the end is just whoever has the best record. And every single time it's going to do that. That's the system.
I mean, Brian's looking puzzled.
Well, I mean, I'm trying to get my head around it. I don't hate it. Like, it's weird, but it's an extra football game. The logistical issues seem to be reasonable. Yeah, the only thing that I'm a little skeptical of is that it does really produce a true champion. But, I mean, I'm the guy who's like, we should do the Scottish Premier League system in basketball. So I can't hate on that. That's like right up my alley. Yeah.
I don't know what the Scottish Premier League system is.
I'll tell you. So the first 13 games of a conference basketball season are a round robin, and then you split the conference into two halves, and they've played each other. So the top seven teams play another six games against the top of the league, and the bottom seven teams play against each other. That's a 19-game conference schedule with all the best games. The finish is just nonstop great games for the whole league, and the regular season title every year is meaningful and balanced. And, you know, then Nebraska gets to play Penn State. But, well, I mean, that happens anyway. Come on.
I think that's actually a good idea. I mean, and could you flip it over into football somehow to Seth's idea?
No, there's not enough games.
Yeah. One of the things that people forget about football, and this is why I take into consideration with the showcase system, and why actually I wanted to keep divisions in the end because of it, is that football, it's really important to know in advance where the game is going to be. You have a massive logistical issue of getting, 100,000 or more people into a small college town, and the towns need to know that's happening. The hotels need to know that's happening. You can't just plan these things in a week. That's why the playoff system, every time they start looking at doing home games, they're like, oh no, we're going to throw this massive logistical issue on top of
these
things.
That is not why.
Well, it's part of, yeah, you're right. It's part of why.
NFL teams can do it. Like, college football can do it.
They can. There is a massive logistical issue that I believe that that's true. But, I mean, that's, with football especially, you can't just have the back half of the season unscheduled. People look at the schedule years ahead of time and go like, okay, let's make that trip to Iowa this year.
All right, it is a great time to take a break, so we will do that right now. It's halftime. We'll come back with the second half on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket.
Clear on the radio.
So, Sam, you think that we're not getting, that neither Musa nor Caleb is coming back? Well, that's sort of what...
My hope is quickly dissipating on Musa. I think Caleb wants to go.
Yeah.
I just don't think that the opportunity like to go, they got to want you. Yeah, right. Yeah. I thought that, he wouldn't be on the radar for NBA teams right now, but apparently, I mean, they keep doubling down with the first round talk.
I'm flabbergasted. I mean, my worst take of all time was probably Jordan Poole shouldn't go in the draft, but this makes no sense to me. I mean, like, not only is he not really doing anything other than shooting right now, but he's a standstill shooter. Like, all the Duncan Robinson stuff, if he tries Duncan Robinson stuff, he puts that off the side of the backboard. Like, I just can't imagine.
What?
I mean, this is like peak don't get top 10 guys, right? Like, if he's 6'4", he's going to be a 4-year college player. Mm-hmm. So, like, you want to aim for 20 to 40, probably.
So it sounds like Oklahoma City, though, is going to take a shot at him someplace in the top 35. That's what keeps being reported.
Right.
And so, even though he's not in the mock drafts, but there's also the noise out there that he's going to go to Oklahoma City in one of their three picks, probably.
Yeah, he is being mocked there. And was it Givney's draft, Ira?
Givney, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's being mocked there.
And so my question is, what does Michigan do? And I looked at I scanned through 1,400 kids in the transfer.
It's funny that you're saying that, because I was going to ask you guys, and probably in fairness to you, I should have sort of given you ahead of time. Hey, I'm going to ask you, who do you want from the portal? Because they're going to have to fill it out. Now, right, I think they're going to lose both guys.
Yeah, and the one guy seems like a perfect fit for me, and I don't think he's made up his mind yet, and that's Pete Nance, who was
rumored. Did we mention him last week?
We did.
Yeah.
We did. And someone said that Illinois was the heavy favorite.
Illinois is the heavy favorite, but that might have been before it was obvious. Now, Pete Nance is from Cleveland, I think, so closer, and he was recruited by Michigan. I don't know if Michigan took
John
him.
John wanted him back. Yeah,
John wanted him.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Yeah, and so Andy does sort of fit. I mean, he feels like the right piece to rotate in with their other two guys on in the front court. You know, that one feels right. I looked around for two guards, which seems like the other thing. And boy, most of them have already been snapped up. And on the list of 14, or they're either been snapped up or they're sophomores, which means good luck to Michigan on those. And the two that I saw were the guy who played with Jalen Llewellyn at Princeton. The two guard there was 6'5 and was a 40% shooter there. I'm trying to think of his name. I'm blocking on his name right now. And then I saw one other guy from Davidson who hasn't yet committed, who I think is a grad transfer, who's a 6'5, almost 40% shooter from Davidson. But other than that, when I went through this list, it was like of the 1,400, 900 were already committed, 300 you wouldn't want, and then the rest were sophomores or not, or were like centers.
Back in about 30.
Things that you couldn't see Michigan doing. So I don't know what's going to go on. And there's no noise at all in terms of...
Well, these things tend to develop very quickly out of nowhere.
Yeah, that's probably true, Brian. That's fair. They probably will. But Michigan's got to do something. They're not, if they lose both these guys, they got to find,
Well, I mean, so you have two guys at center. That's fine. You can play.
Yeah. And by guys, I'll count you back in.
So, fellas, assuming for the sake of argument that Musa goes, which I think is growing increasingly likely, and Caleb goes, which surprisingly, I'm looking like I was dead wrong on, how desirable he is to NBA teams, or at least an NBA team at this point. So, assuming for the sake of argument they lose both guys, who would you target? And I want to throw Pete Nance back in there, Brian, because I know we mentioned them last week, and I guess someone said that Illinois is the overwhelming favorite, but that's before it was looking as likely that Michigan was going to be losing two guys. I think they've been kind of conservative with how much they are really dallying in the portal, per se. I think it's time to get more aggressive, and I wonder if the dynamics change a bit when Michigan gets aggressive in the portal.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get Pete Nance, you take him and you slam him into the four spot for 30 minutes a game. I mean, he's a guy who John Beilein wanted, high usage, efficient player on a terrible team, great assist rate, rebounder, shot 46% from three last year. If you can get Pete Nance, it's no question. Another guy who I think is interesting is a guy named Felipe Haas from Mercer, who shot 40% from three as a stretch for the last 3 years.
Is he a grad transfer, Brian?
He is a grad transfer. Okay. So he was at South Carolina for a couple years, didn't play, went to Mercer, was very good the last 2 years. And a quick check on Twitter, he's still available, but he's down to three schools, one of which is Wisconsin. I do not want to play against this guy. I would like to get this guy. I mean, you don't necessarily need a four, because you have Terrence Williams, you have Will Cheddar, you can make do there, right? I do think that if you can get someone who's a shooter, then you need to go get him. And there's three guys who look pretty decent. There's Malachi Smith from Chattanooga.
He's a sophomore, though.
I know, but maybe Chattanooga has some really good academics. Yeah. Isaiah Mosley from Missouri State, AJ Green from Northern Iowa. Those guys are all shooters, and Michigan could really use any of them. And then Teddy Allen's in the portal. You remember Teddy Allen? Teddy Allen, I don't understand how he's immediately eligible 1 year after transferring away from Nebraska, but whatever. So there are a number of options, Michigan has not really been involved with anyone so far, because they've been in this sort of holding pattern. Mm-hmm. but these things can develop quickly. I would get on the phone with Felipe Haas immediately and Pete Nance immediately.
Yeah, you know, you think about a couple of things, and I want you guys to address this. So you look at Terrence Shannon. Terrence Shannon had Michigan, Illinois. He wanted to come to Michigan. You look at Terrace Reed, and I just got done talking to Terrace, and I'll put this up. Terrace Reed was going someplace else. He did not want to visit Michigan. His recruitment was essentially over. He said, I was done. Yeah, my mom and my coach made me visit Michigan, and they got him. And so that's why I say I don't care that he's an Illinois lean and that guy has a final three. These dudes have shown going head to head with these other Big Ten teams, even late, they can make up some ground really, really quickly. So, you know, I take a run at both of them, Brian. You got any you like, Craig?
I'm sorry. Yes. There's a kid at Texas who's a grad transfer. I think his name is Courtney Ramey. He was a high-level three shooter as well. And Brian mentioned Isaiah Mobley and A.J. Green from North Texas. Those Mobley from Missouri State. Those seem plausible. And then there's a kid at Davidson who I'm blocking on his name, who's a really good shooter, 6'5". And there's Jalen Llewellyn's partner at Princeton, who was a good shooter at Princeton, who's a big two. Those seem the most plausible. I looked at the entire list of 1,400 names. Now the list may have been a bit stale. It's back from a couple of weeks ago, but that seemed to be. I agree with Brian that the four isn't an absolute necessity. Terrence Williams can play the four, I think, against many teams. It isn't clear to me that you couldn't put Terrace Reed and Hunter on the court at the same time.
Terrace thinks you can.
Who thinks that?
Terrace thinks you can. He said, I can absolutely play
the four
with Hunter.
I mean, if he can shoot, then I mean,
no.
it doesn't feel like
Harris is out of it. He said, I play with a big on Mo Can. I can feed the post. I can shoot better than people think I can shoot.
Yeah, but defensively, you're just gonna get torn up.
Mm-hmm.
There's another interesting kind of 6'9" stretch four who's in the portal, who's Matt Meyer from Baylor. You might remember him because he's got the worst mullet in college basketball, and I want that on my team. So, I mean, best mullet. I don't mean worst. I mean, you know, it's always kind of the same. It's the best and the worst.
In the 80s, worst actually was a good word. So, I think you're on brand there.
So he's got. I mean, there's still a number of options in the portal, and I think Michigan is going to be on the phone today. Because we all saw Moose's stats from the NBA Combine, which were basically what everybody expected, except turned up two notches. So,
yeah,
I mean, someone's going to take a flyer on him in the late first round at the latest, because that kind of ability just doesn't roll around very often.
Yeah, I think that Sam agrees with that. I think that's what we were saying before, and I definitely agree with that. But I think they're both probably gone from the information that we have right now, which means Michigan really does need to piece something.
Well, I mean, so you want an 8-man rotation. So you got the two guys at center. You have Terrence Williams. You have Jet Howard.
Mm-hmm.
You have Llewellyn. You have Bufkin. You have – and then, like, maybe you're going to get something from Cheddar this year. Maybe you're going to get something from Barnes this year.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's not.
I didn't get that Barnes vibe from Phil.
Well, no.
Yeah. Although you never know that we've had coaches come on your show before and been like, this guy just doesn't. LaVert Hill doesn't even know what he's doing out there. Like you never. Like
I don't know. Phil is kind of a what you see is what you get. He said that he's made quite. Well, I won't even.
Yeah.
He just gave us a really candid assessment.
And that's what Barnes was. So. Barnes was like, okay, we got to teach this guy how to play basketball, and then we'll see.
Yeah,
what we
I
got.
Mean, but like his role on offense can be stand in a corner and shoot. He just needs to be able to play defense reasonably well, and that's probably the hang up.
Well, it wasn't seen to be what Phil said. What Phil seemed to say was, His basketball IQ has a way to go.
Yeah, that's what. And what does that mean? That means he can't play defense, right? Like,
Yeah, probably. So I don't know. You know, the problem, Brian, from my point of view is, yeah, if you look at who they have with the 11 guys, sure, you can run an 8-man rotation. Heck, for me, you can run a 6-man rotation, and I'm happy as a clam.
Don't stop saying that.
But here's the problem. You got three guards on the team, and one guy gets hurt. I don't know what you do then. You know, because now you've got, you know, you really have a problem. And so they right now, to me, it seems like they got to come up with somebody who can play in the backcourt.
These questions that we're raising, it makes it all the more confusing. Ira brought up something earlier this week that, so who was it? Was it Lunardi that projected Michigan to win the Big Ten?
Lunardi in his very, very early bracketology had Michigan as a 4 seed, but next to it had the little AQ, meaning Michigan to win the Big Ten.
Yeah, but that Lunardi was assuming that they had Musa back and Caleb back. I'm pretty sure that was his assumption, I think, at the beginning of his piece.
Yeah, people were not assuming that these guys would stay in the draft and because they weren't really on mock drafts, but apparently the NBA disagrees. So,
What are you guys surprised that Christie is staying in the draft for Michigan State?
I mean, yes and no.
Like, does it make sense for Christie to get away from Tom Izzo before he can crush his draft stock any further? Yes,
he did. But
has that mattered ever at Michigan State? No. That man, Tom Izzo, has a basement full of grandmothers who he won't let out until you come back to school. And Max Christie's poor grandmother is never getting out of that basement, but it's worth it. Fly. Fly, my friend.
Basketball. So sick of coaching the way I got to coach and practice the way I got to practice.
There was actually some buzz coming from up there that they were starting to think that he was, when he first, you know, sort of said he was testing the waters, they were convinced he was going. And then they started to just get a little bit of confidence that he was coming back. Then, boom, he was out the door.
Same thing happened with Jaren Jackson, remember? They were like, there was like a week where they were certain he was coming back. And then,
is he on any mocks? Max Christie on any mocks as a first rounder?
Yeah, he's on some as a late first rounder. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, if Cable Houston's a late first rounder, what is happening to the talent in the NBA? Just picking random dudes who had like a decent freshman season. Max Christie's O rating this year was under 100. He shot 43-32 from the floor. Like, yikes. How is that guy going in the first round? Aren't there any Europeans out there? Surely there's some 6'9" Serbian guy who did better than that.
Well, you know, I think part of the deal with Christie, because there have been rumors that there were issues between Christie's family and Izzo. And I think part of that, you know.
Locking up grandma in the basement will do that.
Yeah.
I don't really give a damn.
And so I don't know how true those rumors were, but they were pretty loud. That there were some problems there. So maybe he's just decided I'm going to the NBA. And after all, look at Jordan Poole. How NBA ready did Jordan Poole look like when he went out?
In fairness, had Jordan Poole come back and played basketball at Michigan one more year, he'd still be the same player he is in the NBA.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Jordan Poole looked a hell of a lot more ready than
he should.
Caleb Houston or Max Christie.
Yes. Yeah.
Like,
that's true.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. Like, that's
no one was saying that Poole is not an NBA prospect. Uh-huh. The whole thing there was like, come back, get some more skills, and you'll go higher in the draft. That was the entire
Brian's point about Caleb being a standstill shooter. I mean, Jordan can shoot on the move. I mean, you knew that. You felt like you saw the fit. You said, okay, I mean, it seems like it might be a reach, but I get it. I get why Golden State would think this dude in this setting with this team makes a lot of sense, right? I'm just I think Caleb can be really, and let me be clear, I think Caleb can be a really, really good guy. I'm just surprised that an NBA team is willing to bet on that right now. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, you usually have to have some sort of indication that you can shoot on the move to make it in the NBA, and Caleb Houston has not demonstrated any of that. And I'm flabbergasted at this whole situation, and I think it's because he was on that super hyped high school team. But when you put him in situations where he needs to step up and take tough shots, he doesn't hit them. So
I just hope if he goes, I hope he goes in the first round. I hope whatever team is making him a promise, I hope they follow through on it. And he develops like JP. I hope he has that in his future.
I think it's Oklahoma City, and I think Oklahoma City believes they have excess picks. And so Oklahoma City is saying, you know, this is a guy who we think can become Jordan Poole. And they believe that, I think. And so they're willing to make a very low-level gamble, which is what they'd be making because they got three picks in the top 35. And so that, I think that's what's going on there. You know, who thought, for example, as much as we all thought Jordan Poole, you know, had the potential to be an NBA player, who thought he would be the point guard at Golden State? Cause really he acts as much a point guard as anyone else on that team right now. They're sort of positionless, but he doesn't, you know, his game has taken off. I mean,
well, also it took like how long for him to get here? He was in the G League for a time, right?
Yeah.
And like also Jordan Poole, even at Michigan, sometimes he would get in a pick and roll and he'd split it and you'd be like, wow, that's some significant agility that you're demonstrating there. Caleb Houston is never going to do that. Caleb Houston just athletically doesn't have the change of direction. Yeah. And I mean, I'm surprised that people think he can defend at the NBA level. I gotta stop talking about this because I don't want to like have this like.
So selfish question for you guys. All right, so Jaden Ivey, Keegan Murray, Shaden Sharp, who didn't play for Kentucky last year, AJ Griffin. If you had to pick from those four players, who would you pick?
For the Pistons, you mean?
Yeah, of course I'm talking about the Pistons.
Yeah.
Who would you pick if you had those four players on the board? Ivy, Keegan Murray, Shaden Sharp, and then AJ Griffin.
Well, I couldn't pick Sharp because who knows? He didn't play this year by my recall. I would not feel confident enough, you know, taking a chance on him with the number five pick. Unless, you know, I would take Keegan Murray.
Keegan Murray over Ivy.
Yeah, because I think Murray is probably going to be a better shooter, and I think he fits better with Cade Cunningham. But that's my view.
Yeah, I mean, if you believe in Ivy's shooting improvement this year, he's a viable option. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I'm concerned about with Keegan Murray is sort of the opposite of the Kentucky problem, where Kentucky players sometimes get undervalued in the draft because Calipari can't put together a functional team. Mm-hmm. And so they're all in the paint and you come off a pick and roll and it's like Providence and there's 10 guys in the paint. Keegan Murray has the opposite issue, where Keegan Murray plays with one of the best offensive coaches in college basketball.
True.
His turnover rate was 7 last year. Which is good. But that said, 6'8", 225, athletic, three-level score, post-up guy, shoots 40% from three, like does everything that you could possibly want except playmake a little bit. I would happily take Keegan Murray.
Seth?
Yeah, for all the above. I mean, NBA needs some buckets. Pistons definitely need some buckets. You know, Cunningham can't go out there and do it on his own, and Ivy is – I don't know, man. He disappears sometimes, and like that's always kind of been the knock on him, right? So like you put that in an NBA. I mean, I've been to some games for the Pistons when the LCA is just like empty, and it, you know, if you're having a hard time getting it up to play Rutgers, then like, man, like there's a lot of NBA games where you're playing in front of 40 people because that's just the way the NBA is nowadays.
He's such a dynamic rim attacker. finisher. You know he's going to have a commitment defensively. What he, in addition to watching him be an improved three-point shooter, I was impressed with his ability to create. I thought that that was a piece of his game that I thought took a step forward last year. It's a piece of his game that I didn't have a lot of regard for until watching him this season. And it just, I like his fit, his demeanor fit. I think they need some of that edge. And that's my biggest question about Keegan Murray. He's such a nice guy. He's such a nice guy. Like that's the only, because I agree with you. Everything that you guys said about his skill set and talent, if he had a little bit of dog in him, I think he would be in the conversation for the top pick. I think he's that talented offensively.
I don't know. I mean, like, I remember the first play in the Michigan Iowa game where he just put Musa under the basket and dunked on him on a post up, and I was like, all right. So I mean, the question with Keegan Murray is you have no idea if he can play defense, right?
Like, absolutely right.
Also, what happened
about that?
I mean, yeah, they do, but you have to like look at him athletically and realize that he hasn't been coached on defense one iota and project him, and you know that Jaden Ivey can play defense. You know that he's probably going to be a plus NBA defender. And with Murray, that's a much more open question. But I mean, the guy does everything. The guy is like a 95 percentile post-up guy. He's a 95 percentile spot-up guy. He does everything offensively. And I think he's got the athleticism to have that translate. I mean, he finished second in the KenPom Player of the Year rankings because he had a 131 O rating. Yeah. On 28% usage. That is crazy.
Listen, I would take both. Those were the two guys that I identified as like, you get either one of those guys at number five. Ivy would be my pick. But if you got Keegan Murray, I wouldn't be disappointed at all. I would take both of those guys over to the guy that's getting the buzz right now. And that's Shaedon Sharpe. And I'm like, man, it's just so much of a gamble to take that guy there. I mean, I give you a quick story. So, because I was watching the Calipari, some interviews with Calipari, and he said, "Yeah." So he enrolls mid-year, and we're doing some workouts, trying to get him ready. And I said, "Okay, touch your head on the rim," and the dude jumps up and touches his head on the rim. He's like, he's a freak athlete. He said, "Then we go." I said, "Let's move it out. Let's shoot some threes." And so he jumps like whatever it is, 38, 40 inches, touches his head on the rim under the basket. But when we're at three, he's jumping 2 inches off the ground. And he missed every three. He missed every single one. And he said, "I got a rule. You don't have to make every three, but you can't miss every three." And he missed every three. I cannot. If John Calipari is talking about your fundamentals being bad, I can't take that guy. I can't take that guy.
No. I mean, that would be – he's the Darko of this draft class.
That's a great one. You're absolutely right.
100%. Like, yeah, it looks like he's got all the potential in the world, but I mean, you have no idea. So maybe you're in the late lottery and all the guys like Ivy and Murray are off the board and you just want to take a flyer. You can't do that at five. No, that's crazy.
No, that's 100% right. I mean, and they got to take Ivy or Keegan, and that's
all the day.
Yeah.
Call it a day.
And they should send us money. That was right. A question on Brian's board this week. How much do we make?
Send us money. Someone suggested that Sam share his shoes because Sam gets all good shoes.
All right, guys. We got to get out of here. We'll be back. Ira and I will be back tomorrow. And then we'll go blog around. We'll be back next week. Until then, thanks a lot for listening to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Ticket.
I mean, coming out of college, who do you like better, Jordan Poole or Murray?
I mean, Murray, no question. Yeah.
And how good is Jordan Poole?
I mean,
that doesn't happen with everybody.
Yeah, I know. Jordan Poole, everyone said this guy's going to be a great NBA player. We were just like, he needs to develop. And, like, he, you know, the question was, is he going to develop in the G League or is he going to spend another year under Beeline? And the answer was, he was sick of Beeline. But, like, no one was saying Jordan Poole is not going to make it in the NBA. We were saying, dude, go and get your draft. You're going to be a Jaden Ivey in a year. Why don't you just come back and do that?
Yeah. All right, I got to get out of this conference room because I kind of just infiltrated with no permission. So.
All right.
All right, guys, I'll see you.
See you guys later.
See you tomorrow, Sam.
All right.
See you guys. All right.